Hey everybody, it is Sunday, October 4th, 2015, and you're listening to episode 2 of the AIH 20416 podcast. I'm your host, Alan. On Twitter, you can find me at Slip. And joining me in the studio is my co-host.
Hello, everyone.
What's your name?
Oh, Philip.
Philip, nice to meet you.
You as well.
Philip. Phil A. Ivor, or is it Philip A. Ivor?
Philip A. Ivor.
Philip A. Ivor.
Or if you ask Ryan, it's Philip Alver. Listening to him stumble over my name during one of the Superfans podcasts just made my day.
I think he's doing that to troll you.
Probably.
Knowing Ryan. So Phil is here. Phil is a contributor over at ArcticIceHockey.com, where what we're doing the podcast for. That's the AIH, and AIH 20416 had a pretty good debut episode. Couple of nice comments.
I thought it sounded fantastic. And thank you again to Jack. He was a wonderful first interview.
I thought so too. We got some nice commentary on the show, and the show is up on iTunes, which is nice to see. The new host that we're using at cyberears.com seems to be working, which is nice as well. So everything seems to be off to a smooth start for us. If you are listening to this and have not actually downloaded the show, head over to iTunes and Stitcher. We're on both of those platforms now, so you can download the show straight to your device and give some comments on iTunes. We'd love to get your comments, and that's what kind of promotes the show as well. And today, we're going to be speaking shortly with Tony Wiseau. I hope I'm saying that right. We'll get him to correct me when we speak with him. He is a contributor over at SB Nation's Minnesota Wild site called Hockey Wilderness. And they have a great podcast over there as well called the Hockey Wilderness Cast or Podcast. So another podcaster figured that'd be a good place to reach out.
No, absolutely. And we can talk about our rivalry with them or lack thereof.
Well, we'll see what his opinion is, right? We think we've got an emerging rivalry based on events in our recent history. There's actually someone on their site that wrote a nice open letter to Paul Maurice.
Oh, really?
With regard to Maurice's comments about the infamous 8-1 running up the score from the preseason. So we'll get some comments from there. But before we speak with Tony, we've got some Jets news, I think.
Well, I mean, in my opinion, the biggest news is we are just waiting for the axe to fall when it comes to the final training camp cuts, because rosters are going to have to be finalized soon. We still have Lippon on the team. Raffle's still here. Patan's still here. And everyone's favorite, Anthony Pelusa, was still here.
Yes, he is.
So we'll have to see. Now, I wonder if Matthew Perreault's injury or possible injury, how much that might factor in, because if he's out for any sort of time, that would probably cement Patan's role on the team, at least to start out the season.
So, yesterday the Jets played the Flames, and it was their final preseason game.
Yes.
And Perreault left about halfway through the game, right, with a leg injury?
I believe so, yes.
I haven't heard anything specific to what the extent of it is. But yes, if he's out for an extended period of time, then that's another slot that's got to be opened up to one of the kids, right?
Yep. And I have to admit, normally I'd be a little bit more worried about Matthew Perreault being out. Nick Patan's been good enough where that's alleviated my concern quite a lot.
He seems to have had a pretty good preseason.
A very good. And if Perreault being out means that Nick Patan gets top 6 minutes, that's okay by me.
Well, we'll see. I guess we will know a little bit more tomorrow when those decisions are made. I know, again, I haven't seen many of the games. I have the Game Center package, which doesn't include preseason. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to watching some hockey starting this Thursday. Actually, this Wednesday, but Jets on Thursday. And but the one thing that I did notice was Peluso made a case for himself by, like, the most clear third man in I've ever seen on a fight.
Well, and who knows how much of it was just kind of public relations, but Paul Maurice was effusive in his praise for Anthony Peluso. It didn't sound like Paul Maurice had any problem with Peluso stepping in the way he did. The rest of us seemed to have, and Thomas Raffle seemed to have. He looked downright pissed in the immediate aftermath, but
I don't think I've ever seen that before. At least not, I'm trying to think, in the last, what, 10 years, 15 years? I don't think I've ever seen, like, two guys about to square off, and here comes guy number three.
Well, I think it's completely ridiculous, the idea that, oh, well, you know, you can't risk Thomas Raffel going into a fight against Brandon Bolig. Bolig's a legitimate heavyweight contender, no doubt. But if Thomas Raffel was willing to drop the gloves there, he's a big boy. He can take care of himself, and if he can't, well, you know what? He's still going to get props for dropping the gloves anyways. Why Peluso felt the need to step in there? Maybe he thought he was doing the right thing. I don't think he was doing the right thing for Thomas Raffel.
And Peluso's getting paid. He's got a 2-year, $600,000 one-way contract.
Yep.
So he's either going to make that money with the Jets, probably in the press box for a lot of the time, or maybe he goes to the Moose and still makes the money, right? I don't think anyone snatches him off the waiver wire.
Well, and on that note, I know our good friends at the AAH Superfans made a nice point about that one-way contract being a bit of a poison pill, where if the Jets organization thought they needed to give him that one-way because they were so deathly afraid of losing him on waivers, it's probably going to work, because as you said, I can't see anyone picking up that contract.
Well, we'll see what happens over the next week. I guess we'll have a lot to talk about.
Absolutely.
Over the course of this coming week. The other big piece of news, I guess it's not really news because nothing's really happened other than some talk and discussion about this, but we've got the Andrew Ladd.
Yeah, of course we go on record like fools last week saying that we thought it was guaranteed he'd sign a contract, and then this Gary Lawless article comes out where he relatively off the cuff approaches Andrew Ladd asking him about where the contract negotiations are, and Andrew Ladd comes out and says, if we don't have an agreement in place, we may just freeze things and see where things go, which I don't know about you, but I'm definitely afraid of that happening, where we enter the season and Andrew Ladd's camp says, well, you know what? We're just going to pause talks for now. It's too much of a distraction.
This is a big, big week. I put a bold prediction out yesterday saying that I think he signs before Thursday.
I really hope so.
I don't think Buff signs.
No.
But I just can't see it happening. I know there are the usual naysayers, and I'm usually one of them that would be pulling their hair out hearing me say that. And I'll probably, in a week, listen to myself and be like, that was stupid. But I don't know, something just makes my gut's telling me that he is going to get the deal done this week before Thursday.
I'm just terrified because it is such a public negotiating moment, and it's an about-face from everything leading up to this point. Up until this point, it hasn't been sunshine and lollipops, but it's been fairly positive. They've always portrayed things as constructive, as building towards an eventual agreement. And this is just a 180 on that positive feeling. And I think Gary Lawless put it well when he said, this is Andrew Ladd sending a message. There's no way of interpreting it other than public negotiations probably born out of frustration.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see what happens. I mean, he says he's going to be... they're going to turn off the negotiating if the time comes. I think that it gets turned back on if the Jets bring the right offer to the table. I guess we'll see at this point. I know there was a lot of debate on the AIH Superfans podcast with regard to what kind of contract you would or would not want Andrew Ladd to sign.
Well, I know, according to Lawless, the speculation was approximately $5.833 million that the Jets were offering versus about $6.5 that Andrew Ladd's camp was asking for. And the real battle line seemed to be at the $6 million mark.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I'm willing to split the difference there and cross the $6 million threshold. 6 years is not as bad as, frankly, it could be.
So is it, in terms of term, what is it that they're...
According to Lawless, they seem to have an agreement on 6 years.
I think that it would be rough to take eight. I think eight's way too much.
Absolutely not.
Six?
It's not too bad.
It's not awful. It's not awful. Again, personally, I'd like five.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's five, you're going to have to pay him more. I think that, you know, that extra year gets you a little less in terms of dollars that right. He needs to be paid. What is he making now? I think he's like 4.5, right? Like, he's not... you're going to do some research.
Just a little bit. Andrew Ladd right now is at 4.4.
4.4. So, I mean...
That's been a sweetheart deal for a few years.
Yeah, you've been getting a hell of a bargain for a long time.
Well, and there is something to be said for an organization, and I'm not talking about, you know, handshake agreements here or things that don't hold water, but there is something to be said for about an organization taking care of its players after a bargain deal like Andrew Ladd's has been.
Mm-hmm. And I think another thing, like sending a message through, like... There's talk about sending a message to Ladd in terms of what direction this team is going in, and Ladd's been on record in terms of his thoughts of, do I want to go through another rebuild or a youth movement, etc. Mm-hmm. But I think you've got to put that message out to the rest of your team, too. This team, I'm just trying to think. I mean, they haven't had, it's only been 4 years, they haven't had a lot of high-profile UFAs.
Yep.
But... I don't believe they've locked in any UFA to a long-term deal yet. Like, when someone's come up to that the end of that contract, the exception, maybe, is Mark Stewart.
Or Evander Kane.
He was a RFA.
He was, you're right.
He was an RFA. So
for UFA.
But as a UFA, right. I think Mark Stewart is the only one that's gotten significant term, and I call significant, like, let's say 4 years or longer. Yeah. Stafford, you know, 2 years for Stafford and... You know, etc. Like, that's... I don't consider that significant. There's significance to those contracts, but...
The only other one that comes to mind is signing Perot for 3 years.
Yeah, and you snagged him for another team. I'm thinking of somebody that's within your team coming up to the end of his contract where he can walk, and we've come to an arrangement to actually have him continue on with our franchise.
Nope, this is the first.
So it's like, okay, and we've watched others go. You know, they traded away Oduya. We watched Frolik go this past summer. I mean, you watched Ladd and Bufflin walk away?
Well, and I wonder... I mean, you're right. Saying that you're not going to negotiate when the regular season starts is just another way of saying I'm not going to negotiate till you approach me for the deal I want.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if they actually were to freeze talks, do the Winnipeg Jets then ask the Dustin Bufflin camp if they're willing to negotiate during the regular season? Because if Andrew Ladd is going to shut the door, maybe you turn to door number two. Something that you've left until this point,
mm-hmm.
pending the Ladd negotiations. If those are on hold, what stops you from turning over to Dustin?
I just like the idea of a franchise that shows that they take care of their own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's been so many good moments where players, I mean... They may be massive contracts, right? But wouldn't it be nice for the Jets to have a press conference? And again, in the end, you're going to get people complaining, and I may complain about what kind of contract these guys sign. But wouldn't it be nice for this franchise to have a press conference with Ladd and Bufflin sitting down with team ownership? This is a great day to announce that we have locked in two of the key members of this team since they have moved to Winnipeg. You know, just something nice to show that we actually... We're not just looking to get the cheapest deal all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Something that I've been thinking about, because we've talked about this team as a budget team, and that's what they call themselves, right? But I'm starting to get the sense where it's like, budget team is going to equal budget results. And at some point in time, you've got to be willing to invest in something. You can't just say, you know what, it's a little too much for us, you know, one way or the other. You've got to put your money where your mouth is with your players at some point in time. So I don't know. I don't want to feel like this is a team where guys are just going to walk away, down the road over and over again when they have the opportunity to do so, because not just them, but the team is not willing to do anything to, lock them up either.
Yep.
Or to reward them.
Well, if we look at the past few Stanley Cup champions, they haven't been budget teams. LA wasn't a budget team. Chicago definitely isn't a budget team. And if we go further back, even Boston. While we always talk about parity in today's day and age, the teams that spend money still seem to have a much better chance at actually contending.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with regards to the press conference, it'd be nice now. I'm not sure how much we'll think about it fondly in 5-6 years from now, especially if, say, in Bufflin's case, he ends up getting something like the Seabrook contract.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess we'll see. I mean, ultimately, what I really want is I'd like them to lock up Ladd. Get the most value back for Bufflin. At this point in time, I don't know what you're getting. Like, if you get to If you get to this Thursday, you may as well wait till the trade deadline. Or till, you know, February or sometime in there, because unless this team, you know, bombs over the first, what, month and a half of the season, 2 months, there's going to be no way that they're going to tinker with what they're going into the season with.
Absolutely.
Oh, boy. Lots to talk about this week. But anyways, you're going to get lots of, I think, discussion from us over the course of the week. We're going to actually put out a second episode this week. We're going to talk to Travis Hughes.
Yes, indeed.
Is going to come onto the show with us tomorrow and do a full preview of the season with us. At least I hope so. He's agreed to come on the show. I've kind of assumed that he'll do that that subject matter. Maybe he'll want to talk Flyers. I don't know.
And I'll be more than happy to do that with him as well.
Yeah, but I'm hoping that we'll do a season preview, and that show will be posted later this week, probably on Thursday, kind of before the first Jets game. So stay tuned for that. And in the meantime, I think we're a few minutes away from hearing from Tony. So let's take a quick break, and we'll come back, and we'll be talking with Tony Wiseau from Hockey Wilderness, the Minnesota Wild SB Nation blog. We have on the phone with us Tony Abbott, who is an editor over at Hockey Wilderness, which is the Minnesota Wild's SB Nation site, and also hosts the Hockey Wilderness podcast. Tony, when is that podcast? Is it a weekly podcast?
It has been scattershot in the past. Right now there's like 8 million Wild podcasts right there. So I'm trying very hard with that landscape to try to be weekly. We'll have a show out on Tuesday, I think, where we preview the Central Division.
And you're about 47 episodes in? Is that?
I think this next episode will be 42. So, 42. We've been doing it since not last May, but the previous May. So it's been around for a while. Don't listen to the early episodes. It gets a lot better.
We're episode 2 here, so we're just in our infancy with this podcast. So you're from the state of? Are you from the state of hockey?
More or less. I live in Superior, Wisconsin, right now, which is about a 5-minute drive from the Minnesota border. Up in northern Minnesota. I lived in San Diego. My dad was in the military for about the first 15 years of my life, but then I moved up to Minnesota at 15. So it depends on what you want to call from. I mean, technically, no, but I've been here for over 10 years. So I you could say it.
Were you a North Stars fan at all before?
No. I was a little young for that demographic, and it sort of annoys me. With all the people who are like, oh yeah, we want the North Stars back, and you know, get over it. I no offense to you guys with the Jets, of course.
We have there's a similar discussion that takes place in Winnipeg with regard to, especially when it comes to the origins surrounding this team. And I guess we're both in the a similar situation, though. You had an expansion franchise granted to Minnesota. But there's a franchise out there that carries history that took place in Minnesota, and we're the same. So, for example, if you want to irritate a Jets fan, tell them that we should celebrate that Ilya Kovalchuk is the highest the highest scorer in Jets history, because technically he is.
Though I think in both cases, I'm not taking a shot at the Jets for what they did. What's done is done with both of them. Minnesota made the choice to branch off from the North Stars brand, and that's a fine and valid decision. And so is the decision that the Jets made to be the Jets again. That's what you guys really wanted, you know.
Do they do any in pregame stuff or certain games in Minnesota anything to celebrate kind of the history of the North Stars, or like, you know, bring out Mike Modano or anybody? I did it with Cicerelli, or
they brought out Mike Modano like in his last game before retirement. But for the most part, they'll have stuff around the XL Energy Center, I think, if I recall correctly. But they really do try to separate their brand from the North Stars. There's not too much of that. The alumni game is probably going to be the closest that we'll see to that.
I'm looking over at Phil to see if
that's
he's got
exactly.
Any...
That's actually exactly what I was about to bring up. What your feelings were about the alumni game and having a mixed team Minnesota heading into that versus the Blackhawks.
It doesn't bother me either way. You know, there is that history there, and a lot of people when they want to go see a game that celebrates sort of the history of Minnesota hockey, you know, they want to see Neil Broughton, they want to see Dino Cicerelli, they want to see Mike Modano, and I don't think that they should necessarily deny those people that. I you know, it's not a game that necessarily means anything, so give people what they want, give people what they're excited to see. The Wild don't have really the history to put out a full team anyway, so why not use that history? Why not make that segment of the fan base happy?
Is that game taking place at Target Field?
No, it is. It is taking place at TCF Bank Stadium, which is the Minnesota Golden Gophers football stadium.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
Yeah, nice. They'll finally have a good team there.
We thought that we were going to be getting an outdoor game in Winnipeg this season. That was a lot of talk last year, and Winnipeg is hosting the championship game for the Canadian Football League called the Grey Cup, which is a championship football game played in minus 40 degree weather sometimes at the end of November. So they add extra seats to the stadium, and the thought was that they would then keep the arrangement in there and go with an Heritage Classic game in Winnipeg. But they couldn't come to a deal with the Bombers, which is the Winnipeg football team, in terms of covering the cost of all the extra changes that they needed to make to the stadium. So we're probably a few years off from an outdoor game. But I think Minnesota's on the list. I don't know if it'll end up being the Wild, but I would put the Wild probably in top 3 to 5 teams that will likely be on the list, mostly because you can get people that'll make the trek up from Minnesota and North Dakota.
Mm-hmm. Especially if we get like a playoff series between the teams.
Right.
Well, we were talking about it here, and there's a little bit of talk in Winnipeg that there's a rivalry starting to emerge with the Jets and the Wild, and I think it comes from two things. One is, over the last few years, is the pilgrimage that Winnipeggers make down to Minneapolis whenever the Jets play the Wild and kind of try to take over the XL Energy Center. And the second one is just recently with regard to this 8-1 beating that the Wild put on our AHL kids that came down to St. Paul a couple of weeks ago. And of course, the comments from Paul Maurice, and I don't know, all of a sudden people are talking that there's a rivalry emerging. I say that rivalries are more built when teams are competing for championships or titles than just, you know, geographic proximity. But what's the feeling down there in Minnesota with regard to this, I'll put it in quotes, rivalry with the Jets?
I don't think it's, like, derisively referred to as a rivalry. I don't think it's necessarily looked down on. You know, we do acknowledge that there's something starting to form there. The Winnipeg fans coming down and making the trek, that was actually in the news recently because the Wild came out and said, hey, we're not going to block these tickets from being sold to Winnipeg fans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't mind. I guess that they're not worried about Winnipeg like overtaking the arena and that being a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously they want to see more Wild fans than I'm sure Winnipeg fans, but you know.
Phil's looking over some questions.
Now coming back to that 8-1 game, I was wondering, was playing your top power play unit in that game completely distasteful or the worst thing we've ever seen in hockey?
No, I don't think it was, and I'm one of those people who in situations like that, it's like, well, you want them to stop scoring, we'll stop them from scoring. So maybe I'm biased on that. But especially, like, have you seen the Wild's power play? It's dog shit.
Yep.
It's absolute dog shit. They need all the reps they can get.
No, exactly.
Honestly, putting out our top power play unit, the one with Suter on it, that's going easy on you. Like, they couldn't roll out a less likely threat to score.
Well, just looking at my notes, I mean, you had the fourth worst power play in the league last year, a 15.8% conversion rate. I don't blame you for wanting to put in some more practice time, and it really was practice at that point. And frankly, from a Winnipeg Jets perspective, my counter would be, well, we had the gall of playing Anthony Paluso, so, you know, that's our own fault. Just keep on punching us down if we're going to play plugs like him.
Mm-hmm. Did you hear Paul Maurice's comments about that situation afterwards?
I did, and they were very funny.
Uh-huh. So the thoughts were basically, like, give me a break?
Oh, from our end?
Yeah.
No, it was just the people that I talked to, we just kind of shared a laugh. And, you know, that was basically, like, that wasn't, you know, the Winnipeg Jets. I don't think anyone was feeling too high after that other than, you know, you got to see 8 goals scored in your building. You got to see Dumba score twice. And, you know, I think people were excited that they did so well, but I think most of the reaction was pretty realistic. You know, it's preseason.
There's in Winnipeg, maybe this will subside, but there's already a lot of talk like, oh, circle that game on the calendar with the Wild after they did that to us. It was not well received by a lot of the Winnipeg fan base. Personally, I don't know about Phil, like but for me, you're professional hockey players. If you were beating up on my 5-year-old, I might take offense to it. But for professionals trying to make a professional hockey team, give me a break.
You know, I think that you should score on kids as much as possible, even as an adult. Like,
teach them a lesson.
Just show them how much better they need to be.
Yeah. Well, and if anything,
it's a lot.
Well, and you're doing us a favor because, from our perspective, we get to see who keeps playing when you're down 8-1 and facing the other team's top power play unit. Which kids or which roster players in general actually still make an effort to play the game, and which ones kind of sit back and just rest on their laurels.
Yeah, I get that an 8-1 loss is an embarrassing thing. Like, nobody wants to do that. But at the same time, like, you know, it's part of the game. Like, it really is. Like, you're going to have embarrassing losses time to time, and you're going to be salty after them. I know in the very minor esport endeavors that I have with playing Pokemon and NHL hits, like, I get salty after embarrassing losses, uh-huh, too. You know, just got to deal with it.
So you said you're about to do a Central Division preview. I don't know if you want to spoil too much of it, but specifically with reference maybe to the Wild first and then maybe the Jets, what are you thinking this year holds?
You know, I actually did pick both of them to make it in the playoffs. The only real question, I like the Jets team a lot. I think they have a really solid team. And I'm really excited to see what Nikolaj Ehlers can do. I don't know everything there is to know about this kid, but just like a high upside electric score, that's not really something that Winnipeg has. So if you can add that element to that team, you know, that's a dangerous team. And then the blue line, you got Dustin Byfuglien, you got Jacob Trouba. Both of those guys are really exciting defensemen. Trouba's really young, so you don't know, like, what that next step is going to be, so you can dream on that a little bit. Really, the only thing is the goaltending. That's my concern.
That's a lot of people's concern.
Now, where would you have Minnesota and Winnipeg finishing in the division?
Well, I think St. Louis is going to win the division again. I'll just say what I said on my Central Division preview. St. Louis has something to prove every year because they can't get out of the first round. So I think every year they're sort of motivated to scratch the top of that division. And they're talented enough to scratch the top of that division. You know, that's a really good team.
Yep.
That is Snakebit or whatever you might call it. I think Chicago is going to take a step back just because I think they lost too much over the offseason. Sod, and they don't have they don't have any defensemen past their top three as far as I can tell anyway, and I'm not the most up with, you know, depth defensemen on Chicago, but yeah. So I kind of And I don't 100% believe in Nashville. I had Minnesota and Winnipeg ranked 2 and 3 that division. Because I think really, like, all Winnipeg has to do is the goaltending. And I'm also a homer. So
you're looking at St. Louis, Minnesota, Winnipeg. And with Minnesota and Winnipeg ahead of Chicago.
Just because I do think Chicago's had, like, a step back in their roster. I mean, it'd be hard not to. Like, how do you deal with losing a 22-year-old scorer like Saad? Like, I don't know. And I might sound really stupid. And also, Chicago has that whole, like, okay, well, we've won regardless of where we finished thing that they had last year. No. Yeah, I think hungry clubs might pass them up.
Now, you've mentioned Winnipeg's goaltending a few times. How long will Minnesota carry three goaltenders?
The entire season.
Okay.
I have no confidence in their ability to unload Nicklas Backstrom. That's an albatross. It's not even worth talking about, in my opinion.
So it's Dubnyk's job, right?
Yep, it's Dubnyk's job. He'll be spelled by Kemper, at least initially. There are people who are getting excited because Backstrom had a shutout in the preseason, but I'm not buying that for a second. I think it's Dubnyk, and then Kemper gets as much as he can handle. Whether that's 15 games or 25 games is going to be up to him and his performance.
The defensive core in front of whichever goaltender is spelling Devin Dubnyk, the D-core I find in Minnesota is severely underrated. I was wondering what your thoughts were on your D-core as a whole, and specifically who you think should be skating alongside Ryan Suter.
Ooh. Okay. I 100% agree with you. Like I said, I'm a little bit of a homer that the Wild's D-core is very deep. It's not only is it deep, but it's very good. It's kind of a far cry from what a few years ago where we just had Ryan Suter and Jonas Brodin.
Yep.
As players that have been considered to be very, very solid. I think the Wild have it right with their D pairs right now. They've got Ryan Suter paired up with Jared Spurgeon. Yep. I think Ryan Suter brings a lot of good things to the table, but you know, being the being leaned on to be the number one offensive guy on a pairing, I just don't think that that's something that that he can bring. But Spurgeon can. He's a pretty good offensive defenseman, and he provides defensive value too. We really like Spurgeon at Hockey Wilderness, you guys.
Well, the only knock I have on him is his size. If he wasn't shorter than 6 foot, he would be an absolute star.
Yeah, but even then, like I think it limits him somewhat, but I don't think it limits him that much. He's about as physical as you could expect a guy that size to be. I think he led the Wild in hits last year, or in terms of defensemen. He is routinely at the top of block shots. Like he's short, but he's stout. He can engage physically at least to a certain degree. Anyway, I think that's a good balance of offense and defense between Spurgeon and Suter.
What do you say to people that claim that Minnesota plays a boring brand of hockey?
See, here's the thing. I've never gotten to witness day in and day out just like exciting hockey. So whatever boringness is inherent in the Minnesota Wild's DNA, like that's most of what I know. It's like asking like an Amish person who's never left the farm.
Uh-huh.
Like, what do you say that about your life's being boring? And you're just like, oh well, you know, barn raising's pretty cool.
Uh huh.
That's a very good way of putting it.
Yeah, it certainly is. Yeah,
I haven't had that rum springa of going out to see other exciting hockey teams.
Yep. Speaking of excitement, I have to admit, from the outside looking in, it's very hard to get excited about the Minnesota forward core. And part of that is Mikael Granlund. I mean, I think just yesterday, Mike Russo of the Star Tribune had another article out talking about how the Minnesota Wild are still waiting for him to reach his potential. And it feels like this is the 100th time I've read this article this offseason. I was wondering, do you think he will ever live up to the hype that accompanies his name and has for the past few years?
That's a tough question. I what makes it super disappointing last year is that he was playing in about the best situation that you could possibly ask for him to play. If I was drawing up, like, okay, if I want Mikael Granlund to break out, I'm going to do this, this, and this. Like, they did it. They put him with Parise. They put him with Pominville. They gave him a bunch of offensive zone starts. They gave him a decent amount of power play time, I think more than any of the other young Wild forwards. And I think there were 39 points to show for it. Like, that's, you can't be doing that. So I wouldn't say that it's done for completely, that Granlund can't realize at least most of that potential, but time's running out and I'm pretty skeptical myself.
People in Winnipeg like to talk about the prospect pool for the Jets. It's probably the one thing that everybody's the most proud of when it comes to this franchise. And typically, it's ranked anywhere. I've seen it number one in a number of places, but usually in people's top five lists. What do you think of... I know you had, along with all the other SB Nation sites, a top 25 under 25. But what are you thinking of your prospect pool and young players? And who should we be keeping our eyes peeled for this year?
I'll address the overall state of it. I don't think it's a very good prospect pool. Two reasons for that. One, Chuck Fletcher gives out second round picks like candy, pretty much. they traded two for Matt Molson, one in 2017, I think, now, for Chris Stewart. For Chris Stewart, a second round pick. Like, why? Such a bad move. They traded a first and a second for Pominville, and you can justify that, but that still is going to hurt the overall impact of your system. And then the Wild just seem to be obsessed with, like, get in the early rounds, and I'm not talking necessarily first round, but second round. Like, they've been drafting a lot of guys like you've never heard of them, but Brett Bulmer and Raphael Bussière, like, these big guys who are projects, and maybe, like, if they put it all together, they're going to be, like, you know, that big, tough scorer that the Wild need. But lower probability guys, more project guys. So those are probably the two biggest shortcomings. I'm trying to think of guys that you'll see this year, because I could talk about Alex Tuck or Joel Eriksson Ek, the most recent two first-round picks for the Wild. But as for guys that could make an impact this year, Tyler Graevac is a player that you could see this year. He's about six. He's like 6'6". He's a gigantic guy who skates decently. He's a center who is probably going to start the season off in Iowa, but if there's a center injury, he could come up. Mike Riley, who the Wild got after Riley opted for free agency with Columbus, he's a guy that's probably going to start in Iowa to begin the year. He's got pretty good offensive skills. He's supposedly really great on the power play. I haven't gotten to see too much of the Wild this preseason, but everyone says he's a really good power play guy. So if the Wild need, you know, we talked about how deep the NHLs or the Wild are with defensemen at the NHL level. Like, you know, if someone like Matt Dumba, who the Wild are hoping to put out in the power play, goes down, like, they can just next man up with Mike Riley, who's highly touted and very skilled. So those are probably the two that I would say you should look out for most this year.
How long until Jason Zucker surpasses Zach Parise on the depth chart?
Oh, wow. That's at least a couple years. And I know I'm really high on Zucker. I think he's great. I think that's a really good comparison to his game. But I think Parise's value defensively far surpasses Zucker right now.
Yep.
With the kind of game that Parise plays, as long as he can stay healthy, like, I don't see him falling off a cliff like a Danny Heatley or what it kind of looked like Thomas Vanek was doing last year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think he's going to be a productive player for a couple more years. And while I think a lot of Jason Zucker, I think he should get power play minutes this year. I was really impressed with his goal scoring acumen. Zach Parise is so much more well-rounded that I think it's going to be at least a couple more years.
Yeah. You mentioned Thomas Vanek, and I find it absolutely fascinating because almost across the league, he's considered to have had a very disappointing year in his first year with the Wild, despite having a 21-goal, 31-assist, 52-point season. Considering he'll probably end up on the third line centered by Charlie Coyle, should we expect about the same from Thomas Vanek this year?
The hope for me is maybe you'll see the same numbers because he won't get the ice time. But as long as he's more productive in those minutes, I'm not going to have too much of a problem with him. That sounds about right. I don't think he's going to score 30. I don't think he's going to, in terms of raw point totals, just because of his role as a third liner, I don't think that he's going to score as much as he did, say, in Buffalo or with New York. So Vanek got 16 minutes per game last year, a little more than 16 minutes per game last year. You know, if he gets 14 minutes per game and scores 52 points in that, that's really good. So it's not really the raw point totals that I'm necessarily concerned with Vanek. It's just how productive he is in those minutes. And there's no doubt he was less productive last year, even on a per-minute basis, than he had been in his previous years. It was a down year. Like, I'm not going to be like, well, he had 20 goals, so it must have been good. No, it was very middling.
Speaking of, you know, maybe a bit underwhelming, and sorry to keep coming back to your power play, but I was wondering who you would have on the Wild's number one power play unit.
That's a good question. As much as we've talked about Granlund being disappointing, as he has been, I wouldn't mind seeing Granlund on that power play. I know the argument with Koivu is that he takes faceoffs, and he's not as bad on the power play as a lot of Wild fans make him out to be. But I think what the Wild are really missing on their power play is creativity. And I think that Granlund offers so much more of that, even if he's not what we hoped for him to be. I think he offers so much of that not much needed creativity that they need. Parise makes sense, obviously. Nino or Pominville, Nino Niederreiter, that is, or Jason Pominville on that right wing. That also makes sense to me. I don't like Pominville out on the point, which is where they've had him forever. And then some combination for defensemen of Jared Spurgeon, Marco Scandella, or Matt Dumba. I think that would be a really dynamic power play.
Would you even have Suter on the second power play unit?
I don't want to shit on the guy. Because I think he gets a bad rap because he's asked to be someone who he's not. Like, if you're going to be expected to be, you know, something that you're not, you're just not going to feel anyone's expectations, and you're not going to max out who you are as a player. I think you could have Suter on the power play, but at the same time, I think he's much better at 5-on-5. I think he's much better on the penalty kill. So why tire him out by playing him on the power play when you can have him do what he's good at or what he's best at? I might have him on the second power play, but I'd be just as fine not having him.
I'm going to try to shoehorn one situation into another as a comparison point and bring it back to a Jets topic just to get your opinion on this. You have Parise and Suter, who were both at the same time locked into, you know, massive term, massive dollars contracts.
It's only 10 more years.
It's another decade, right? So obviously the caliber of player, the amount of money and the amount of term are all not going to be the same situation. But in Winnipeg, our two pending UFAs are Dustin Byfuglien on the blue line and Andrew Ladd up front. This is one of the largest topics in Jetsland over the course of the summer because none of those deals have been finalized as of recording this. That doesn't even sound like they're close. And we're walking into this season not quite sure what's going to happen in the end. So, obviously, the arguments are coming from all sides. Do we need to lock them both up to long-term contracts? Which, there's no way either of them, I think, are signing for less than 6 years. And Byfuglien's probably looking at $7 to $8 million. Ladd's probably 6 to 7. They're both 30 years old. So, Do you think that, let's say we lock them both in, first of all, do you think that that's something that we're going to be regretting in 3 or 4 years?
I'm starting to wonder. The trend with the salary cap in the NHL is that you give more term and less money over that term, but I'm starting to wonder if the best play is to be offering more money, or at least when you get to players who are over 30,
mm-hmm.
offer more money and less term. I think the Wild tried a little bit of that with Thomas Vanek, and though maybe Thomas Vanek could have gotten more than $6.5 million, and that seems reasonable. He might have taken a discount there.
It sounds like a more solid bet when you're dealing with that player that's still an RFA that's heading into, do you bridge him? Do you give him a long-term deal? And in Winnipeg, there were a few deals that ended up, I think, turning out, or looks like they're going to turn out pretty nicely. Ladd's contract up to this point, which was signed when he was, I don't know if it was signed, was it when he was with the Thrashers, or was it before that with the...
I'm not sure, to be honest.
With the Blackhawks.
Yeah, that's a good bet. You know, you get a guy who's... You know, you get a guy who's 26, 27. If you can lock him down for, what's the limit? Eight years? So maybe a little less than that. 6-7 years for a 27-year-old guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's another thing entirely. But,
yeah,
man, I couldn't imagine going 6 years on a 31-year-old Dustin Byfuglien. And Andrew Ladd is as rough of a game as he plays. Like,
It feels like it's... you know, there are diminishing returns that happen pretty quickly, and 2 or 3 years from now, you're sitting there regretting these contracts potentially. So,
what's hard is that if you lose, I can see why teams do it, because a GM is always like a bad year away from getting fired, right? So if you let go Dustin Byfuglien and Andrew Ladd, that might be better for the long-term health of your organization. But it might also put you out of a job when you miss the playoffs the next year.
And we might be staring at worst-case scenario here, where we're going into the season. We probably are going to be in contention for a playoff spot. These are going to be two key pieces that we're going to need to carry through to do it. So the prospects of trading them drop substantially. And now all of a sudden, you know, the closer you get to July 1, 2016, I just think your chances of you know, they know, right, that their chances of getting that term and money from somewhere are going to happen. So why not wait? And mm-hmm. do they then walk away for nothing?
Yeah, that's rough too. Like, the Wild ended up doing that with Marion Gaborik. God, was that 08? Something like that. And that was a blow that just, you know, that wrecked the franchise. You couldn't even get, you know, a pick in return. Like, yeah, I don't envy that situation at all, but what would you rather have? Would you rather have that cap space, or would you rather have $13 million tied up in guys until they're 37? I know I'm saying this as a Wild fan,
mm-hmm.
where
mm-hmm.
we've got $14 million tied up in guys, you know, when they're 50. But
that's what I think that may be the biggest story that happens in with the Winnipeg Jets over the course of this year, is what happens with those two guys.
Yep.
And how that
both
plays
really
out.
Good players, like they're exceptional players. I'm not going to deny that. I'm not trying to make it sound like, you know, I'm discounting their value or anything like that. But there's been talk over the last 6 months or so from our media about the Wild trying to make a run at Byfuglien. And from experience, like just signing another 30 plus year old, like God. Aren't we done with that?
Speaking of 30-plus-year-olds, I'm looking at your core, and Parisi's 31, Koivu's 32, Pominville's 32, Suter's 30. How long will the Minnesota Wild Stanley Cup window be open, if you do believe it is open as I do?
I go back and forth on this, honestly. Sometimes I think, like, okay, well, if it's going to get done, those guys are, you know, getting older, so it's got to be done this year. But then, like, you know, you look at Jason Zucker and you look at Nino Niederreiter and you look at Matthew Dumba and you're like, oh, well, you can dream on those guys. Like, maybe they'll take over. So much is dependent on guys in that 21 to 24 range for the Wild. And they're not a finished product. So I can't tell you what I think. in terms of how long the Wilds Cup window is open. You know, I hope it's not just this year, but at the same time, you get that feeling, you get another year that Granlund's not everything you wanted him to be, you know.
Final question from me. Earlier this offseason, I noticed an article talking about whether or not the Minnesota Wild would miss Kyle Brodziak. I was wondering how much the Minnesota Wild will miss Matt Cook.
Not at all. I'm totally relieved to tell you, not at all. In fact, the imprint that he's leaving on our salary cap, that's too much Matt Cook. Like, it's bittersweet, because it's a little bit of remnants of Matt Cook, but it's what enabled us to have no Matt Cook, at least in terms of us having to see him, but I don't know. It's gonna be a while before finally shaking Matt Cook off.
Tony, my last question is simply, where can we find all your work?
Yes, my esteemed work, indeed. Mm-hmm. You can find not just my work, but the work of the entire Hockey Wilderness staff at, guess where, hockeywilderness.com. This week we are trying to finalize our bold predictions, so we're going to try to dream big, and or in some cases maybe extremely poorly. Who knows, maybe we'll think that that Zach Parise has a 2-goal season.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you'll have to find out. But we're trying to take leaps out into the irrational and then try to back them up with some facts.
Okay.
So that should be pretty fun. We'll have regular coverage. Obviously, we're revamping a few pieces of our coverage. We're adding high school hockey coverage to our site. That should be starting in the next week or two. We're doing some different stuff with our college stuff. We cover women's Gopher hockey and also the CNWHL.
Nice.
The podcast is something that that I'm really excited about, just in general, in terms of growth, and it's my baby. Just to full disclosure, it's totally my baby.
We hear you.
So I guess you know your podcast.
We just gave birth to this one over here, so.
Yeah,
our co-fathers.
Proud Papa.
It's a great time, you guys. It's a great time in your podcasting lives. So our podcast hits about weekly. We strive to put it out on Tuesdays. And yeah, just keep coming by Hockey Wilderness every day, for all of the best Minnesota Wild news and analysis.
And
mostly analysis.
Can you find the podcast on iTunes?
You can just search Hockey Wilderness Podcast. It's a little cluttered because someone put a feed to when we were hosted different. That doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Yes, Hockey Wilderness Podcast, a Minnesota Wild podcast. It has there's a couple of them floating, but the one that starts at 41 or 42.
Okay,
that's the one you'll want to listen to.
Perfect. Well, Tony, this is Tony Abbott. You can find him on Twitter at Tony Wiseau, Wiseau. What's the reference again?
It is a reference to auteur Tommy Wiseau of The Room.
Mm-hmm. And you can head over to at H Wilderness Cast for the podcast Twitter handle, and at Hockey Wilderness for the Minnesota Wild's SB Nation Twitter account. So thank you
with
very
one
much.
One S, by the way.
Hockey Wilderness with one S.
Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Great. Yeah, thank you, guys.
Let's take a quick break from the show to go over a few plugs. We are on Twitter. At AIH20416 is the handle, so find us there. My name is Alan. You can find me on Twitter at Slip. That's Slip with five I's, or Slip. And my co-host, Phil Ivor, can be found at Philip A. Ivor, PhilipAIver. So find us over there. Look up Arctic Ice Hockey at Arctic Ice Hockey over on Twitter as well, or at arcticicehockey.com. That is the SB Nation blog for the Winnipeg Jets. All of your Winnipeg Jets news and notes can be found on that site from all of their great writers. Our links are also there for this podcast. There is also a second podcast called AIH Superfans. You can find them on Twitter at AIH Superfans. Go follow them and hear their show as well for a different perspective on the Winnipeg Jets. You can also email us. We are AIH20416@gmail.com. send us a note if you want to recommend a guest, if you want to be a guest on the show. We'd love to hear from you and love to get different opinions about all of the teams across the National Hockey League, as well as about our home team, the Winnipeg Jets. So with all that being said, let's get back to the podcast. All right, so that was Tony Abbott.
Yes.
Sorry for getting, well, I got his handle right in the, I keep turning out the lights, by the way, just so you know, behind the scenes, my chair is right up against the lights, and I keep turning them off in my apartment, including the modem, so luckily we're not online right now.
Okay.
There we go. We, Tony is over at Twitter again, at Tony Wiseau, and find his work over at the Hockey Wilderness website, and look up the Hockey Wilderness podcast.
Now, if I'm remembering correct, he said that Minnesota and Winnipeg would end up 2-3 in in the division. That was surprising to me.
That's pretty bold. We're going to do, again, we're going to do a preview show this week and have pretty good guests lined up for the discussion. And Travis Hughes is going to be here, who is basically runs all the content for hockey on Sports Blog Nation, right?
I like to think of him as our boss's boss.
Yeah, so he's going to join us, and he edited together the NHL preview for SB Nation, which had contributions from all of the sites.
Yep.
I know that Tim Bonner, managing editor at Arctic Ice Hockey, contributed the Winnipeg Jets piece. So he's going to come and join us, and we're going to do an overall preview, and maybe we'll put some quick rankings together, though I might have to rely on you to do that.
Ooh, I'll do my homework tonight.
But yeah, I think Chicago is second in that division, maybe even first, but stranger things have happened. I mean, LA wasn't in the playoffs last year, right? So
yeah, I think Dallas really is the wild card, because we don't know what to expect. Will their revamped forward core really mesh in the regular season? Will their goaltending be at least league average? I mean, from my understanding of it, Niemi's had a fairly good preseason. Carey Lehtinen's been a bit of a disaster. So it seems like bringing in the king of mediocrity might have been a good idea for Dallas.
Uh-huh.
I think Devan Dubnyk is the real deal. I don't think he'll be quite as good as he was with Minnesota in 2014-15, but I think a top three finish in division is realistic for them. I think it's more realistic for them than it is for us.
Okay. Well, we'll leave it at that in terms of that discussion, because that's just a taste of what you're going to be getting later this week. So I think our schedule is going to be looking like this show you'll be listening to likely on Monday. We'll post it. This is Sunday, so we'll post it tonight. On Thursday is when we're hoping to release the season preview show. Next weekend is Thanksgiving long here in Canada, so we'll have to figure out schedules. I have no family in Toronto, so it's not a problem for me, but have to assume that you've got something going on, but we'll figure it out, and also try to get a guest lined up for the next episode. And then moving forward, we'll probably be looking at weekly podcasting, probably putting out shows on Mondays as we go forward. But I think from time to time, we're going to do some post-game analysis or perhaps breaking news. Certainly if this contract gets signed, this Ladd contract or the Buffett contract, we'll probably want to hop on the phone quickly and put something out in terms of some thoughts. So keep your eyes peeled for that stuff as well.
Yep.
Anything you want to say before we go?
No, that's about it. I'm excited to hear this episode, and excited for tomorrow.
All right. Oh, that's loud. Put that down for a second. So, thanks a lot for listening again. This is AIH 20416 Podcast. Find the show at AIH 20416 on Twitter. Search for me and Phil over on Twitter as well. Phil has plenty of writing that's done for ArcticIceHockey.com, so go over there and see everything that he's put out. Listen to the AIH Superfans podcast. They put shows out on Fridays, a little bit closer to the source because they're all in Winnipeg. I think that's it.
Yep.
Have I got all the plugs? I don't know. If I don't, you'll see them in the write-up and in future shows. So anyways, thanks a lot for listening. Have a good week.